It's time for another episode of the Dumbphone Show, and today we have Ryan with us. He is living in Australia, but he's from the United States, and he's going to talk to us about his experience with dumbphones and what has been for him to use these marvelous devices. So Ryan, how's it going from Australia? I think we are like 12 hours difference, is that correct?
Yeah, right now with, after daylight savings ended, we're 12 hours different, so... It's getting late here, but I understand quite early where you're at. So that's
yes, that's true. At least I'm on Eastern time. If I were on Pacific time, it would be probably like around 5 a.m. and 8 p.m. for you. So it would be quite crazy to be recording at that time. But Ryan, tell us a little bit more about your story. You're now in Australia, but you're from the United States. So tell us, what's the journey that took you to your current dumbphone?
So I traveled to Australia for university work, and then I ended up, mostly settling down here. So I actually teach at the Australian National University in Canberra, in the capital of Australia. But so moving here, I originally, was sort of think of my journey towards dumbphones as a bit of a bell curve. So starting out fully resistant to smartphones, embracing them somewhat reluctantly for travel because of the convenience of Facebook Messenger and all that sort of nonsense that helps you stay in touch with friends and family when you're traveling abroad. Then finally returning towards a sort of minimalistic lifestyle. So after experimenting with a few inexpensive devices, I eventually in 2017 purchased a Samsung A5 2017 with the idea of investing a little bit money into a phone that would last me a while. And, not with any sort of without anything in mind beyond that. But in 2020, as my phone started to started thinking about how to get the most out of this phone, I discovered Lineage OS, modifying my Android devices, and through that discovering the world of sort of de-Googling. So that's kind of the first step that led me down this road or path towards digital minimalism, was initially removing Google and removing those sorts of extra things from my smartphone life. So, I downloaded Lineage OS as a way to sort of extend the life of my phone, but soon realized just how sort of extensive the grasp of Google was in my existence. And, when I started, getting notifications on my Android devices for things from my Gmail, from bills and things like this, like knowing that Google was aware of all these things really sort of started to trouble me. So I went down that sort of de-Googled Android route first. So that's sort of what introduced me into this direction. And my phone happened to be really well suited for that. So what started out as a purchase, to sort of go into a higher end smartphone, actually, ironically, somewhat put me down this pathway. So after, that sort of dragged me down a sort of rabbit hole of sorts, where eventually I discovered even more extreme de-Googling, such as, Graphene OS on a Google Pixel device, and sort of getting down the privacy rabbit hole and all these sorts of things, removing Facebook from my life as much as possible. I managed to fully de-Google. I still have sort of a Facebook presence that I maintain for mostly family and professional purposes, but otherwise I sort of de-Googled. I removed those other sort of connections.
It seems to me that you are definitely in a very delicate position, because as a professor, you have to maintain, certain online presence because of how classes are nowadays, especially, during the COVID pandemic. It was essentially for students the only medium in order to attend classes, in order to further their education, and for professors to have tools that would allow them to grade and allow them to, go further in the studies. And then you started, of course, in the privacy sector. And I think that a lot of people come to dumbphones or voice phones as privacy, because, you know, they don't have these complex operating systems. They're, you know, more simple. Of course, we know that there are different versions nowadays. You know, we have the Android voice phones and we have the non-Android, right? And they're becoming less and less because of the prevalence of just how, you know, the world is continuing with technology. Although there are some companies that are coming up and coming that will not use the Android open source project, which is, I think, a good step to go back into the voice phone arena. But I'm kind of interested to know a little bit more about, okay, so you de-Googled, you kind of got into this privacy sector, but what does it prompt you to get a dumb phone, knowing that you need to access these technologically, you know, like you need to access email, you need to access a couple of extra things here and there as a professor. By the way, what field? That's a question that what's the field that you're in? And how do you live a life as a professor with a voice phone, essentially?
Yeah. So, as far as the field, I'm in classics and ancient history. So, largely Greek and Roman history, as well as sort of ancient languages, Greek and Latin teaching and things of this nature. So, you know, I sort of have a lot of niches in my interests, whether it's academic or technological. So, you're right. The COVID pandemic sort of led universities to embrace these extremely intrusive technologies for the sake of convenience and, you know, to stay connected, you know, really in a rapid sort of attempt to get everybody caught up or in place to, you know, to be able to complete their studies. They really didn't question some of these practices. So Zoom is fairly notorious for being less than honest about their encryption, for example, but Zoom courses are sort of the standard here. Other softwares such as Proctorio, for example, you know, monitoring students' keystrokes and things like this, really creepy sorts of things. But even pre-COVID, you know, I sort of recognized that as an academic, I need to have a public profile, but I'm trying to segregate as much as I can to maintain as much of that privacy as possible. But as far as the dumb phone, it's kind of funny. The first thing that sort of sparked my interest in making that next step to dumb phones or voice phones was when the Nokia 225 4G went live in Australia, and it was on sort of a dirt cheap sale at our local retailer. And it was sort of a nostalgia factor. I figured, well, now I didn't know exactly how it was going to work in my life, but it was dirt cheap, $60 Australian, which is, you know, it's not that cheap anymore, but when it first debuted. So I figured I'd buy a couple, one for my wife and one for myself, and see how it went. And as I worked with that, I started investigating dumb phones even further. Especially became intrigued by the idea of Android dumb phones, because I really enjoyed the Nokia, but ultimately I really relied heavily on Signal and similar things that were only available on Android, really. So trying to find that kind of balance, trying to find that perfect fit. For a while, I was actually carrying around a Nokia for calls and texts, and my Pixel with Graphene OS for Signal and email. So it was kind of a very bizarre situation where, in my quest for digital minimalistic lifestyle, I was actually holding two phones, which is probably not what most of the purists on the Reddit forum, for example, would agree with. But
yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are definitely different levels and different people and different solutions. I mean, for me, I carry more devices now than when I used to have a smartphone, but I live a more meaningful life personally, right? I have an MP3 player, I have a GPS, and I have my dumb phone, right? And the reason why is because, of course, you know, the Lite Phone 2, that's my dumb phone of choice, it doesn't have Maps yet, although it's coming in like a couple days, probably about a week or so. But you know, I don't mind it, because honestly, it has allowed me to be more present with people. So yesterday I was at a birthday celebration, and you know, it was interesting. You know, we were there, there was music, there was food, and a lot of people were on their phones. You know, it's like people don't know how to just relax and enjoy and have a good time anymore because they have to have this constant stimulation. You know, and at my table, I decided to kind of like just go with an experiment, just go with like a little bit of like, hey, how much time do you spend on your phone? You know, like I wasn't trying to promote, you know, my light phone or whatever. You know, of course, that's always a topic of conversation whenever I pull it out, whenever I send a text or like make a phone call, they're always like, what is that? You know, but it's just really interesting to me how we as human beings have sacrificed human interactions for a little square that has most of my preferences, and that the little square is dominating me more than I'm actually, you know, doing it myself. I mean, I'm pretty sure you see it very frequently in your classrooms.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how you can just, you know, be giving a lesson and students will just sit in front of you flipping through their phones without any care or notice, you know, or it's just simply what they do. Until very recently, I was much the same way. I'd have to check my Facebook for whatever reason in the middle of a conversation. It's just really, it's quite extreme how much that has grasped our consciousness and, yeah, the sort of effect that it has on our social interaction.
I'm curious, you know, you are a professor of history, right? You know, and especially, of course, the classics. And I'm thinking about Epicureanism, Stoicism, right? Like these practices that are very self-discipline oriented, right? Of course, we also have the kind of like lavish practices from this time period as well. You know, it wasn't all discipline and the Roman life of, you know, pursuit of power. Of course, they dominated. That was the dominating factor for a long time, especially since Aurelius, he had that kind of lifestyle, right? Like, you know, we have the meditations and we kind of go through that. But when you compare ancient history to current history, right? Like, you know, is this just a matter of, hey, this is what's popular right now, and eventually we're going to kind of like see a turn again to this more like limited lifestyle that prevailed for, you know, centuries. I mean, we're talking about the Victorian era where people had to restrain most of their passions and you know, they were not trying to let go, and they were trying to be very, you know, proper decorum, proper things. Now it's like, well, you know, whatever you want, I guess, you know, it's whichever you prefer, it doesn't matter, right? But there is also people that adhere to these older lifestyles. And not getting into religion here, but I think that that's also a very interesting intersection from like the historical perspective, right? Like, you know, you have all of these different lines of thinking that promote a very balanced lifestyle. Yet at the same time, you have what? You have a people nowadays that do not enjoy that kind of living anymore. So maybe my question is like, how do you see these historical perspectives, different ways of living affecting us today, and do you see a turn back into these old you know, philosophies?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And a lot of what I've studied at different times is those sort of, even in like monastic sort of escapes and things like this. Yeah, you seem to get kind of ebbs and flow where you get a rise of excess and a rise of sort of conspicuous consumption, things like of this nature, and then actions against it, which start out as sort of, you know, small, but grow over time. You know, they become noticeable because they're sort of pushing against the norms, right? Which, you know, whatever the craze may be at the time, you know, by rebelling against that consumption or against those sort of social norms, they become noticeable and then gain their own following. So yeah, I think, you know, historically we've seen those kinds of ebbs and flows of consumption and excess, and then sort of reactions against it. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in, you know, in the modern era with our technology, because obviously there's not much to compare that to. But in terms of that conspicuous consumption and that excess and the rebellion against it, that ebb and flow, yeah, there, you know, perhaps we'll see that. And perhaps, you know, this sort of nostalgia for older technology or older style technology, you know, maybe part of that. You know, whether it's the rise of the rediscovery of feature phones or the rise in popularity of BlackBerry or any of these other things. You know, perhaps that'll be part of it.
Yeah, you know, you gave me a very academic perhaps right there, like, you know, the whole let me toe the middle of the line, you know, I'm trying to give the proper response here and not go into one side or another, and I understand that perspective, of course. I'm kind of curious to see, like, how has that affected your work just in general? Do you think that has made you a more productive professor, or, you know, like, are the trappings of the phone still there, you know, and it's not just like a smartphone versus voice phone conversation, but rather like, you know, it's just like a personal journey.
Yeah. I think over the last year or so, when I've really gotten into this, it has boosted my productivity. Rather than just simply going to a device to procrastinate, you know, if I'm working on writing or doing research, for example, you know, rather than killing time on Facebook or whatnot, I've managed to manage my time better, or being present with colleagues, being present in the office, or even more importantly at home with my wife, rather than spending that precious time, you know, because I have a fairly busy work life, rather than spending that precious time together just flipping through my phone, you know, we're actually more present. We're, you know, having conversations. We're enjoying that time together rather than just simply spending it on a screen. And it also gets some interesting remarks from students whenever I pull out my flip phone to check the time, and, you know, it gets a lot of laughs or you know, sort of curious responses. And then afterwards, I've actually had some students say, "Oh, you have one of these too." You know, they'll pull out their Nokia or whatnot, you know, because they're also into that sort of minimalistic lifestyle. So it's an interesting conversation point as well.
You know, it seems to me that it's quite a very good, you know, you kind of put it in words. One of the benefits is that you're able to be more present, especially with family. But I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that before you bought two Nokia devices, right? Like, you know, and is your wife also into kind of like this space? Because I think that helps a lot. You know, that helps when the two people that are in the household, you know, one of them is not a smartphone consumer, the other one is on the dumb phone spectrum, right? Or, you know, voice phone privacy, whatever. And it kind of can make it difficult, right? Like, you know, for communication, if you have a preferred way, like some people have iMessage, and then when they switch, they're like, I don't have iMessage anymore. It's quite a hurdle, right? So that kind of pulls them back. So how has it been with your relatives, especially since you're transplanted to Australia, right? Like, you know, you have relatives in the United States. How have you worked that out?
Yeah. So, I've managed to get most of my family and close friends onto Signal. And with my Opal, I'm able to stay on Signal, so that's been good. My wife has, you know, been encouraging of me for the most part. She hasn't quite adopted it in the same way as I have, but she's sort of, you know, positive towards it, I suppose. She uses a lot of these sort of messaging apps for work and things like this, so it's a little bit more difficult for her to make that transition, but. You know, now that I found sort of a solution that can help balance both worlds, I think she's more inclined towards it. So, my as far as family goes, I've managed mostly to stay in touch through things like Signal and using Facebook on my phone, on my computer rather. Limiting that Facebook contact to the laptop has been helpful, but a way to stay in touch and while still sort of encouraging them to adopt other alternate messaging apps like Signal, really. It's been a mixed bag, but overall it's been a positive experience.
I don't know your particular interest in the classics. You know, of course there's plenty of area, but I personally think of the areas of communication, where communication used to be definitely slower and more methodical back in the day when they did not have access to all these tools. Do you think that our methods of communication, or we have come to an area, right? Like, you know, maybe when you're comparing or when you're thinking of language even, right? Like, you know, the expressions of language, I think of how like Greek and Latin have, you know, cases, right? Like, you know, and of course there's still language that have cases, especially German. I can think a direct, you know, kind of like descendant to that, but of the case system. But I'm thinking of the expansion, right? Like, you know, we seem to use different methods of communication today, but this hyper communication, maybe it's damaging us, right? To a certain level, because it makes us think like, I need this in order to survive, or I cannot wait. You're mentioning going to your laptop. Do you think a lot of people are afraid of not having that constant contact and just deferring that kind of like, hey, I can just connect when I connect, and when I'm not connected, I'm not connected. Do you think people have lost that maybe in your experience, or how have you seen it maybe from a familial perspective, that is like, why can I not reach you all the time, right? You know, except because of the time zone.
Yeah, I think we've gotten to a point where we do take that instant reachability for granted, and that has been a bit of a difficulty for my family, because yeah, they're used to, especially since I do live abroad, and during COVID, borders are closed in Australia, so there's no ability to visit. You know, even the possibility of visiting on the horizon is a distant sort of possibility. So that kind of promise is also absent. So there is some of that. But I think overall we're adjusted to this life. Speaking personally, you know, my family and I are adjusted to living abroad, and we make the most of what we have, and it hasn't been too bad. In terms of broader, you know, historical perspective, you know, I think we take the ease of communication for granted. You know, thinking in the ancient world, where, you know, literacy was rare, and where letter writing was an expensive, you know, prospect, where you had to, you know, acquire something to write with and write on, and then hire somebody to transport it wherever, you know, it was, and it took forever. You know, you really needed to make that communication count. So the intimacy of that communication was much more significant. And even in our own time, when writing was primarily by letter or even telephone, you know, things were, I think, more thoughtful, more detailed, less taken for granted, versus today, where you can simply send a Facebook message or even an email and just send it off without any thought. It's just, yeah, things have changed, and that value or that sort of depth of communication, I think, has perhaps been lost in exchange for, it's a quality over quantity sort of thing, I think. We have all the communication in the world now, but the quality has, as a result, sort of suffered, I think, from a historical perspective, at least.
Absolutely, absolutely. I, again, definitely agree with that. Let me ask you one more question, Ryan, and then we'll give you a final word to close as we get to the final part of the podcast. And that is, you have tried different ones, right? Like, you know, you have tried different dumb phones, but what made you choose the one that you have right now? Like, what were some of the things that you considered, right, when switching and when looking for all of these? You tried a couple here and there in the past, but why the Opal Smart Flip? Of course, it's a Australian brand, and that's part of it, but what else?
Yeah. I mean, having the accessibility of the Australian bandwidth, right, or the different tower bands, is put it slightly over the top over the Shock Classic, for example, which was until now my favorite flip phone, even though I couldn't really make calls on it because it didn't work with my carrier, but I could send texts and I could use the internet, and it was good. So yeah, availability, it has it's interesting. It has lower specs, which in a way makes it better for me in terms of my minimalist lifestyle, because I can't load it with extra apps beyond what I need, even if I wanted to. So I can sync my calendars, you know, which is an important aspect of Android that I've, you know, sort of seen as difficult to let go, keeping track of all my, you know, courses and my meetings and all that. you know, has just enough to get by to, you know, use Signal without being too slow. And the touch screen is actually really nice. It's one of these flip phones with a touch screen, so you can sort of click on those little hard to reach corners that, you know, something like the Shock Classic with the cursor is a bit difficult to navigate. So things like Signal, for example. But there's a whole world of smartphones in Australia that, you know, I'd really like to dive into. It's a real rabbit hole that's unexplored here, because the sort of market, these things exist and they're put out there, but they're not marketed because they're for, you know, largely elderly populations or those low data plans that that aren't really the big target for phone companies. So, yeah, there's a whole niche market here that is sort of an unpaved path that, you know, I might end up exploring further. But of all the phones I've tried, this has the best combination of features. Android is in a smartphone form, or I'm sorry, in a feature phone form, is actually quite nice with that customizability. Especially the Opal doesn't have the Google services, which is helpful from the privacy perspective as well. So
that's good to hear. That's good to hear. And yes, of course, I agree. Android in a feature phone format is way better than Android in a smartphone, because you don't get as distracted. You don't get that kind of like, oh, you know, I'm going to use my screen, I'm going to use this app or whatever. And of course, there is something to be said about self-control and discipline and things of that nature. But it certainly helps when you don't have the ability to do all these things. Ryan, thank you very much for coming in and for staying up, I guess, over there in Australia. Thank you very much for just sharing your experiences and a little bit more, and kind of like maybe encouraging professors that, hey, if you're listening and you're a professor, you can do it too, right? Like, you know, you can go into a feature phone. But thanks for coming. As always, we like to leave our podcast with our guest's final words. So tell us whatever you want to say.
Well, thanks, Jose. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. This has been an interesting journey for me, a very quick one. I tend to adopt things like this, you know, and go sort of full bore. So it's been a very interesting experience. Your YouTube channel has been helpful in sort of guiding me in these directions and, you know, pointing me in that way. And it's been a good experience. I've gotten to the point where I rely on one phone, a nice flip phone. I can use other devices for other needs, and the simplicity of things has been relieving. It's been, I feel more relaxed. I feel less burdened. So hopefully this will help others, and you can do it. It's not as daunting as it might seem on the surface.
That was Ryan with us from Australia. So thank you for listening today to the Don Phone Show. Every link or everything relevant, the phones that he has used, it will be on the description below. So make sure to check that out. Make sure to check the links, and make sure to share this episode with a friend that may be an academic and may be thinking about switching to a dumb phone or a voice phone. Thanks for listening again. And as always, we remind you to stay focused on your goals.